all of that then constitutes theme two. Now, I want to go back to that sighing motive, that sighing portion of the theme, and listen to it again, because it's not as remarkable melodically as the love theme itself, but it's a very important element of this movement, and I want us to really mark it well in our musical memories. Again, the sighing motive creates a dreamy, slightly melancholy mood. The love that will doom Romeo and Juliet begins to grow. It combines the respiratory element of heavy breathing with the dissonance that presages the doom of this union. Again, theme two, part two, sighing motive. I would draw your attention to the coda. We're running near the very end of the piece, part two, because the sighing motive is going to come back in a very important way after the deaths of Romeo and Juliet, and we'll hear that moment in just a moment. But first, part two of the coda. A gorgeous and melancholy chorale is heard in the winds, and it sounds religious. It sounds like a memorial of some sort. It combines the sighing motive with the mood and rhythm of the hymn theme to create a moving tribute, perhaps Friar Lawrence's last rites to the doomed lovers. Part three of the coda, strumming harp, oh, the harps of heaven. One can't possibly miss that reference. Strumming harp resumes under a shimmering, major-ish version of the love theme. This gorgeous, ethereal music would seem to suggest that Romeo and Juliet's love has transcended the bonds of mortality and continues in a higher place. And this vision of a timeless transcendent love would seem to be a direct reference to Tristan and Isolde and this whole late 19th century idea of transcendence, of transfiguration, of enduring and indeed metaphysical love above and beyond the everyday. That's different, by the way, from the Shakespeare, isn't it? I mean, when they die in the Shakespeare play, they're dead, and we suffer. But here in the late 19th century, oh, no one dies, not especially if you're insanely in love. No, that has to continue. It's a very different vision, a very different faith system, at least artistically. Finally, part four of the coda, monumental and shattering B major chords, powerfully conclude the piece. This is not a tragic ending, and it would seem to reinforce this idea of transcendence and transfiguration. Please, let's listen to the conclusion of the piece, the coda, parts 2, 3, and 4, and let's be aware of the role played by the sighing motive in initiating this transfigurative portion of the piece. Coda, part 2.